The opinions expressed during this program are solely those of the host and guests. They do not necessarily represent the views of the ownership, management, staff, or advertisers of WMGQ Magic 98.3.
Welcome to At Central Jersey with Maggie Glynn on Magic 98.3. New Jersey just dodged another severe weather system and what could have been another catastrophic event in the Garden State. Now, September 2015 served as a bookend of sorts to an extended warm season. The average statewide temp of 70.7 degrees was 4.5 degrees above the 1981 to 2010 normal, and it ranks as one of the third warmest on record since 1875. So I took these stats from the website of the Office of the New Jersey State Climatologist. That's Dr. Dave Robinson. He joins us to talk about whether the weather is changing. Dr. Robinson, thank you so much for being part of the show.
My pleasure.
So anyone who lives in New Jersey might be thinking, yes, after Sandy, after all these storms, the weather is changing. Is it changing, Dr. Robinson? Are what we're all experiencing and we're looking at this saying, oh my gosh, New Jersey is really getting hit by the changes in our lifetime. And should we start getting even more concerned?
We should. The weather itself is always volatile. I mean, we've had storms and we've had droughts and everything in between. But when you add it all up together and you look at it in a longer-term climatologic sense, we are getting warmer in New Jersey and we're getting wetter. But some of that wetness is coming in really heavy pulses. In other words, we have more variability in our precipitation now. Overall, more, but then a lot of it's coming in these big storms. So, yeah, things are more volatile, and it does appear as if that pattern is going to continue well into the future.
Okay, so what you're talking about, the warmest and wettest, is kind of just like the pattern we are experiencing in the past few weeks where we were drought and then we got inundated. Is that the description?
Well, that shows you some of the variability we have in the weather and climate. Now, you can't take every event and say it has to do with climate change or it's that much worse due to climate change. But the overall trend is that we are going to have more of these and more extremes with these particular events. Some might last a little longer, say at a drought or a heat wave. Some might be more intense, say a very strong storm like a Sandy or the onshore winds that gave us all the coastal flooding last week. But you won't be able to take any individual one of them and ever say that it would not have happened had humans not been affecting the environment. But you can begin to say now that what would have been a bad situation is being made a little bit worse by humans having an input on the climate system.
All right. Well, let's talk about that in New Jersey, because so many folks still say, no, people are not really. This is just it's cyclical. These things happen, and it's just the way that it is. But you have records going back to when?
We have records, really good records, back to the later part of the 19th century. But they're only 100, 120 years, depending on what they are, and some records are only as short as during the satellite era, not for New Jersey, but in a broader speaking sense. And that only goes back 50 years at most. So we're limited by our observations, but we have more and better observations than ever these days. But then you also just look at the physics. The physics tell you that the world would be an ice cube if we didn't have a natural greenhouse effect surrounding and an atmosphere surrounding our planet. So it stands to reason, in pure physics form, that if we add to this greenhouse effect, it will make things a little bit warmer. And then finally, we have models which try to recreate our past climate. And once we're somewhat confident they're doing a good enough job, we turn the dials, if you will, and we add additional greenhouse gases. And that's our foggy crystal ball into the future.
It is foggy, but what you're looking at, I looked at some of the stats, you know, through your office about what's been going on in the state, major flooding, snow in unusual times, very heavy snows, months with below average precipitation. So when we look at all of these things, is there any one thing that we can say, to plan for the future about how things are changing, or we just don't know globally?
There are a few things that can be said, but as you point out, it's awfully chaotic system. So what we call a signal, it takes a while to emerge from a noisy climate system with all these variations. But we are seeing signals beginning to emerge from the noise, one of them being just warmer global temperatures. It won't be everywhere every year, but overall, the planet is warming. This year, for instance, is going to go down as the warmest year on record, and globally, we have good records back to about 1880. But we're really cooking the planet this year. New Jersey and the Mid-Atlantic, not as much so, because we had a cold winter here, but it was very regionally cold. Globally, it's been warm. That signal's emerging. We're seeing a signal towards more extremes in precipitation. That signal's emerging from the noise. We're seeing sea ice melt and snow cover melt out earlier in the spring in the Arctic, and that signal is emerging from the noise. So we're starting to see it on a variety of fronts, getting a clearer picture that something is changing. It's changing in a pattern, and it's changing at a pace that can't be, in most people's estimation, attributable to natural variations, thus the idea that humans are having a major impact.
All right. And when people look at the Arctic and say, okay, so that's really far away, and, you know, the temperature changes that you're talking about, so it's a couple of degrees here, a couple of degrees there. Does that really make such a big difference over time?
It certainly can. It can melt glacial ice and the ice sheets and influence rising sea level. It can disrupt atmospheric patterns, which can lead to periods of drought and periods of excessive rainfall that might not be commonly seen in the past. So these subtle differences can be amplified and can make a difference.
All right. Now, you as the climatologist looking at these records every day, you're very involved in this every day. Personally, when you look at this, if you could say to the people of New Jersey, folks, this is what's going on, this is what we think's going on, what would you just say to them about the changes that you are seeing?
Well, when I look at Jersey specifically, I look at the temperatures. And I see that, for instance, we just ran some numbers from May through September. We looked at the five warmest months of the year. We averaged the temperatures, and we found that this year, much like September, but for that whole five-month period, it was the third warmest in 121 years of record. Okay, it's the third warmest. Well, the warmest in that 121 years was 2010. Second warmest was 2011, and the fourth warmest was 2013. In other words, four of the top May through September's for warmth in the last 121 years have all occurred since 2010. It's things like that that are starting to just jump right at you. We saw flooding. That's one thing we haven't talked about, but people in central New Jersey certainly remember Floyd and Irene. But they may
absolutely
also remember that
absolutely
2007 and 2010 we had major floods, and we even had a major flood in the beginning of May of 2014. These are six or seven of the largest floods in the last century in the Raritan Basin have all occurred within the last 15 years. So clearly something is happening in New Jersey as we see it in rainfall, we see it in temperature.
And let's take us out of New Jersey for a minute, just because this is very current right now. What's going on in South Carolina?
South Carolina had one of these weather anomalies that, you know, statistically comes along every 1,000 years.
It's unbelievable.
They just had this atmospheric river of precipitation just come into the state and sit there for a good 24 to 48 hours with copious amounts of moisture that dropped upwards of 2 feet of rain in some parts of the state.
Two feet of rain. How could that? It's unbelievable.
That could be half a year of rain here in New Jersey.
And how do you cope, whether or not? I mean, how do you even get through that?
Well, you you don't. I mean, dams have failed, roads are closed. I mean, people in New Jersey can think back to Floyd and Irene, which dumped 8 to some places up to 10 and 12 inches of rain to get an idea, but double or triple some of that, and that's the rain that fell in central and eastern South Carolina.
It's unbelievable.
Reasonably localized. It didn't cover the whole East Coast. It was very unique, but I would not look at climate change, and I would not say you could quantify that and say, well, if the Earth's atmosphere wasn't as warm as it's been, we'd only get 20 inches of rain instead of 24 inches of rain.
Unreal, right.
But again, it's not as if that event, even if it can be partially tied into our changing climate, it's not as if that event would not have occurred had we as humans been having a major influence on the climate. We just may have made it a little bit worse.
Now, let's talk about Sandy and that. Does Hurricane Sandy, Superstorm Sandy, the problems with Superstorm Sandy, can they be related to climate change? Or was that also just these horrible things coming together at once?
There are a couple. There's really two levels of connection with climate change and Sandy. One, it was a stronger storm than it would have been, and probably in South Jersey, a wetter storm than it would have been, and in North Jersey, a more powerful wind storm than it would have been, without warmer conditions over the Atlantic just offshore. We had just gone through 22 consecutive months of above normal temperature before Sandy, and sea surface temperatures were several degrees above normal. Sea surface temperatures and the warm sea surface powers hurricanes. And therefore, there's actually been models run that suggest that Sandy would have taken the same track had it been in average sea surface temperatures. But by this, when they added the above-average sea surface temperatures, it made it a stronger storm. So that's the direct connection. There's also some speculation that there's a connection with the Arctic and with melting ice in the Arctic changing the atmospheric characteristics up there, that influenced the pressure patterns across the middle latitudes that helped to steer Sandy towards the New Jersey coast. That's more speculative than the first part with the sea surface temperature, but the short answer to what I've already given in a long form, yes, climate change had some impact on Sandy and thus on New Jersey.
Now, and how about the rising seas in New Jersey and all of our coastline on both sides as we go forward? What kind of things should we be planning for in New Jersey, you think, looking at this
state
climatologist?
Right. Sea level is rising. I have some wonderful colleagues here at Rutgers that are look at it in more detail, certainly, than I. But we do see sea level rising up and down the Jersey coast, on the coast, in the back bays and such. And there's no end in sight for that. So that's the science of it. And then you have to get into the public side of things, the human side of things, the policy and the planning. And that's where, as a scientist, I tend to leave it in the hands of those individuals. But again, you look at it and you're looking at cases where you're going to see increasing number of repetitive losses as the sea level rises and all of our infrastructure along the coast is more vulnerable. So there are going to be decisions. As I say to my students, you are going to be part of the decision-making process, whether it's just voting on something or part of a planning board or what have you, or even as a homeowner in vulnerable areas, perhaps, as you go through life. And it's only going to become more critical along the Jersey coast in the decades ahead.
Well, and it seems in many areas in New Jersey, as you just pointed out, post Floyd, Irene, Sandy, we're very vulnerable, it seems, in many areas still, that we are not winning the battle against the water.
Mother Nature is going to win out. We can put Band-Aids on situations for some time, and we have a tremendous cultural heritage along the coast, and a major economic interest along the coast. So unlike some coastal areas in the U.S. and around the world, we're going to be, I think, more aggressive than many other places in addressing this issue. But it is going to be a constant battle. We are going to continue to have these storms come along that are going to pummel our coasts, and every time we're going to have to kind of regroup and decide what we're going to do about it, be it beach replenishment, seawalls, elevating structures, elevating bridges for access and exiting from these areas, and ultimately consideration in areas with multiple repetitive losses on whether to rebuild. These are decisions that are going to become more pressing as we go through the years ahead.
Well, and looking at this most recent storm, so many things on the coast already are exposed before the winter even arrives. We're talking in early October here.
Yeah, that's a little bit frightening. Normally our beaches grow during the summer as the net flow of sand is onto the beach, and that provides a little bit of a barrier when winter storms come along. Well, that barrier is gone, just like it was gone after Sandy, even more so. But this was a pretty big hit. This was the biggest hit from Cape May up to Sandy Hook that our coast has taken since Sandy in terms of beach erosion and even Back Bay flooding. So we're going to be more vulnerable as winter storms come upon us this year than, say, in the past couple of years. And with that, my concerns are more in the way of flooding and disruption along the coast as this winter goes along.
You're listening to At Central Jersey with Maggie Glynn, and I'm speaking with Dr. Dave Robinson, the New Jersey State climatologist, about how things are changing in New Jersey and how you have kind of the statistics to prove it, and where are we going from here, and how are we addressing this? And, you know, speaking of this storm at the beach, the problems that we already have, how far back should we be withdrawing? You're making me very nervous about all this.
As I said, that's going to be dependent on looking at different areas and seeing how much they're getting pummeled,
right?
Whether there can be adequate defenses. We have to make sure that when storms strike, that people can safely evacuate. We want to make sure that people are aware of that, because not only are their lives at risk when storms hit, but those from emergency management communities' lives are at risk as they might come in to try to help you. So there's all different levels of discussion that have ensued and should continue to ensue in coastal communities, and for that matter, in flood-prone inland areas.
Right, and let's talk about Central Jersey in particular, because as you said, problems continuing here.
Oh, absolutely, and we see it in South River and up in Manville, where there's been Blue Acres funds that have bought out homes, and they've simply eliminated the homes and made it parkland because, oh my goodness, these people were suffering so frequently. And again, it was also became a burden on the community as well. And then you have other measures that have been instituted, such as the flood control around Bound Brook. Now, that took over 40 years to get into place, but now Bound Brook is much less vulnerable to flooding of the Raritan and tributaries to the Raritan than it's ever been before.
Right.
But I dare say you can't do that everywhere. You're going to have to make some wise decisions, and I think first it's going to be looking at the areas that are just too vulnerable and maybe should not be rebuilt, while putting your efforts into areas that still can be salvaged and you can get a lot more time out of. And those are very difficult decisions that are going to have to be made by communities throughout the state in the years ahead.
Right. Well, as you're saying, 40 years to figure this out in Manville, and listening to the stats that you have compiled here and are sharing with us, it doesn't seem like we have 40 years to make decisions in a lot of these communities. And are communities reaching out to you or the state? How does this work to make a concerted effort to figure this out in the long term? Is anything being done?
That's a very good point and a very good question. And there is some state interest. There's a state hazard mitigation plan that my office has contributed to that tries to look at those areas that are most vulnerable and potentially have the information at hand to be able to address these issues. A lot of it is geared towards being ready to provide support should disaster strike. But you know New Jersey, with its famous home rule reputation, a lot of these decisions are going to be made at the local level. And there will be some differences between communities and amongst different regions of the state, but it's going to be oftentimes in the hands of the local communities to make the calls.
Okay, but as a layperson, you know, looking at these statistics, am I jumping up and down too much saying it seems like it really needs to be paid attention to at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say the sky is falling in that regard.
Just yet?
We do have limited time, because the longer you wait, the more difficult it's going to be to address the issue from just the practical engineering standpoint, and the more expensive it's probably going to become. So I don't think you're overreacting by being concerned about this, but I'm also not suggesting we need to have knee-jerk reactions. We're a very smart populace, and I think we have to just address the scientific part of the issue and understand that, and with that information at hand, then go out and make decisions about how it's going to affect society in the years, not just decades, but the years ahead, but also looking beyond the years into the decades.
Now, looking at the statistics that you have in the department, is the weather changing within New Jersey, north, south, central, Pinelands? Are you noticing a shift in all of that, too, within the state?
Yes. The state as a whole is getting warmer. There's not one area that's getting warmer relative to others. We have urban heat islands and things like that, but no, and there's not one area of the state that's getting particularly wetter compared to other areas. It's gotten a little wetter in the northern half of the state in recent decades than the southern half, but
becoming more tropical that we need to really be looking at.
Well, we're all in this together. That's okay. The way I like to think about it. We're a small enough state that we can look at one thing in concert. Sure, right now, it's drier in central and northeast Jersey than it is elsewhere in the state. But as a whole, I think the one interesting thing and the useful thing about the size of our state is we can address things like this as a whole. And when we talk about 127 miles of coastline, yes, it is particular just to that region, but we're a small enough state that we all can identify with the Jersey Shore. And I would hope that would help in the decision process. It doesn't always, as we certainly know.
Right.
But if I can be a little Pollyannish, I would hope that given the nature and the size of our state, we should be able to make decisions that are going to affect us all and in the long run benefit us all.
Now, how long have you been the state climatologist?
I'm in my 25th year.
And how did this come about? Did you say, you know, I would like a job like this? How personally did you get involved in all of this?
Right. Well, I grew up in Bergen County, so I'm a Jersey resident from day one. So I was born and raised on the hurricanes and snowstorms and heat waves and floods of the state.
And always weather changing. That's why we love New Jersey. We love the changes most of the time.
I love the four seasons. So I became a professor at Rutgers in 1988-89 academic year as a climatologist. I studied global snow cover in my general research, and I started teaching here in the Department of Geography at Rutgers. And our state climatologist at the time was another professor at Rutgers, and he retired, and I was recommended to the dean of the Agricultural Experiment Station, and Cook College, which is now the School of Environmental and Biological Sciences, because the governor, Governor Byrne, had asked that Rutgers should house the office of the state climatologist. So I accepted that appointment, and now, in a blink of an eye, it's 25 years later. There's only the Iowa state climatologist has been in the position longer,
Oh, so there's like, there's groups of you. You can, you go, there's one in every state, I assume.
Yes, we, and matter of fact, I hosted the American Association of State Climatologists annual meeting down in Cape May just this past June.
Perfect place for it.
We had 40 states represented, and a number of different federal agencies as well came together for 3 days of meetings.
Now, when you came in 25 years ago and to now, and you look at the changes that you've documented along the way, what's most surprising to you?
Well, I like to kiddingly say that no one knew what a climatologist was back then. They thought maybe we mixed drinks or something like that. But nowadays, not only do I sort of need my degree in physical science, but a political science degree might help a little too. Because everybody knows what climatology is right now. Everybody has an opinion on climate change and climate variability. So that's what's changed. There's always been a need for day-to-day and decade-to-decade information on weather and climate to help people make decisions, be it what coat to put on their child to go to school or how big to make your drain pipes when you're building a new parking lot.
We love weather. Yes.
Storm magnitude. So there's always been that need. But the big change has been in going with the visibility of climatology and people's opinion. Frankly, all too often, I think, I'd like to think negative opinions, although most of the feedback I get is very positive. So we do applied work, but with this interest in climate variability and change and how incredibly politicized it's become, that's been the big change in my career.
And surprising.
Well, it's not surprising when you look back at it and see it in the big picture, but, you know, it became surprising how we were almost cast out by certain groups and chastised. And I've been generally treated very well by people in New Jersey, but I have stories from outside of the state in, shall we say, more conservative areas where state climatologists have taken it on the chin quite a bit. And we're just out there trying to give the straight story with no political leanings at all. As I've said several times in this interview, we're looking at the science of it. We're trying to separate that from the political science part of it. And that's where people put the two together. And I find that most aggravating at times because they have political aims and they tend to not just look at the science. And I'm a nerdy scientist who wants to just look at that.
And let me ask you, is there a place that folks can go and look at the data that you look at, to get an idea of what is going on in the state and just, you know, look at that data, too, and
yeah,
see
well,
exactly
you
what you're talking about?
To say that. Yes, we have, if you go to NewJerseyClimate.org, and if you go on that page, you can see historic data from past winters, from past years, temperature and precipitation. And it also links with our weather and climate network. My office maintains a network of 60-some-odd weather stations, literally from High Point to Cape May, where we gather information on all sorts of weather and climate variables, even soil temperatures and solar radiation measured every 5 minutes. This network provided continuous coverage to the governor and emergency management officials during Sandy. We didn't lose the station. The station stayed up because they're on solar power and have cellular transmission of data. And the computer system here at Rutgers stayed on generator power. So we're very proud of that and what the service we are providing to the state. So go to njclimate.org and take a look.
Well, Dr. David Robinson, the state climatologist, we are out of time, but I have to ask, will you please come back the next time to talk about the global snow lab? We didn't get a chance to discuss that, and I would love to talk to you about that.
I'd be happy to. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you all for joining us on At Central Jersey with Maggie Glynn on Magic 98.3. Missed a show? Listen online or download episodes at magic983.com.